Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. It is Wednesday, the 16th of November, 2011, and I am Bill Buckmaster, your host for the Buckmaster Show on KVOI AM 1030, known as The Voice. It is also known as Southern Arizona's most powerful news talk station. And our simulcast partners, a big shout out to KJAA AM 1240 in Globe, folks listening to us in Gila County and in Cochise County. People listen to the Buckmaster Show on KAPR AM 930. We have live streaming of the show at buckmastershow.com, along with an archive of previous programs. Also live streaming at kvoi.com. And the Buckmaster Show continues to grow the opportunity for you to listen to the program anywhere at any time. The show can be heard, of course, on our website, buckmastershow.com. It's also available at tucsonsentinel.com. The Sentinel is Southern Arizona's online news service, and we're excited about our newest agreement with the Tucson Citizen. The Buckmaster Show is available 24/7 at tucsonsitizen.com. We are live Monday through Friday, noon to 1. We will begin with a leadoff newsmaker interview with David Modier. Mr. Modier, General Manager of the Central Arizona Project. Lot to talk about when it comes to water. At about 30 minutes past the hour, Jack Challum will join us. Mr. Challum is the Buckmaster Show contributor on nutrition. He has a new monthly report out that includes some new information that omega-3 fish oil supplements can ease depression and cognitive problems. Then we'll close out the show with Tucson-based novelist Lydia Millett, Pulitzer Prize finalist, who talks about her new book titled Ghost Lights. We encourage you to be part of the conversation. You can call us on the Buckmaster Show live line 790-2040. You can submit questions at buckmastershow.com or submit them using the Buckmaster Show Facebook page. We begin now with David Modier, the general manager of the Central Arizona Project. Mr. Modier, before going to CAP, was head of Tucson Water for 10 years. David, good to see you.
It's a pleasure to be back, Bill. It's always good to get back down here to Tucson.
It's good to have you live with us in studio. Okay, the Colorado River water, up until maybe a year or two ago, we were worried about some shortages, but I guess the snowfall last winter was very good in Colorado.
It was a great year for precipitation in the Colorado River Basin. Last winter, early last winter, we had got down to about 7 feet above the elevation where the first level of shortage on the Colorado would be declared. We had a great snowpack throughout the winter and actually had very good rainfalls in early to late spring, which kept the inflows into the reservoir system continuing to flow longer than it normally does. In the end, the flow was about 140% of normal from the snowpack of last winter. And as a result, Lake Mead has risen, and we have what is called an equalizing release out of, Lake Powell has been rising, and we've had an equalizing release from Lake Powell to Lake Mead, and Lake Mead now is up about 45 feet from what it had been at that very low level that I spoke of earlier.
That was they call it the bathtub ring around Lake Mead. I mean, it really got down there, didn't it?
It did. As I say, it was down at about 182 elevation above sea level, and the first level of drought for shortage on the Colorado was declared at 1075 feet above sea level. So we were close, and we were assuming that within the next year or two there would be a shortage declared. And so the change in the weather patterns from Mother Nature was very well welcomed. And we got that rise I mentioned this year, and we expect it to go up another 30 feet during this water year also. And if we get a good winter, and of course it's early to tell, but it has started out with a good snowfall in the upper Colorado River system.
Tell us a little bit about the Central Arizona Project. People just say CAP, and everyone assumes folks know exactly what we're talking about. This is was a huge undertaking back in the 60s, and we're talking over 300 miles of water.
It was a huge undertaking, and in some respects, it's an engineering marvel the way it operates as efficiently as it does in moving two-thirds of Arizona's allocation to Colorado River water, about 1.6 million acre-foot of water on an annual basis, 336 miles down here to Tucson and up in elevation 3,000 feet approximately. So it is a marvel. We minimize the amount of energy, even though we are the largest energy user in Arizona. The way it has been engineered to use gravity along with electrical power to push the water up, then let it flow for miles by gravity before it has to be lifted again, is a marvel. Well, now at about 30 years old, so we are running into the same issues that cities and towns and all run into as the infrastructure is aging, and we need to replace and modernize. Much of the CAP system was custom made. You can't go buy the materials off the shelf. Any of the pumps and motors that are utilized, it was all custom made. A lot of it made overseas by manufacturers. So that's been a challenge for us, is to replace a lot of our aging infrastructure. When it was built, it was over a $3 billion project. Probably today it'd be closer to a $10 to $15 billion project to construct today. I'm not even sure you could do it with the environmental restrictions and mandates that are out there today. So we are fortunate in Arizona to have gotten it done. It's been
I wonder, David Modier, what it would have been if it had not been done. What with the growth that Arizona has had in the since the 60s, what kind of place would this be without CAP water?
Well, let's take a look at it from the aspect that we serve 80% of the population in Arizona now as utilization of CAP water. City of Phoenix is about 45% CAP water, 55% Salt River Project, and it varies to a significantly larger amount for CAP water to lower amounts, depending on the original sources of the water. But I assure you, if you take that 45% away, even for the city of Phoenix, you reduce the size of metropolitan Phoenix probably by 50% or so, and certainly the economic needs would not be able to serve industries like Intel in the Chandler area, a huge employer and boon to the economy of Arizona. Same here in Tucson. Tucson had always projected that we would someday get to around 90% use of Colorado River water and allow the aquifer underneath Tucson to recover for us. And the economy has set that back a bit, but still Tucson in the area is using over 50% of water supplied out of the Central Arizona Project. I don't think we'd have anywhere close to the economy that we have today or the quality of life that we all enjoy without the ability to move our allocation to the Colorado River water and put it to good use here in Arizona.
And the taxpayers of Arizona pay a small amount on their property taxes for the CAP?
They do. They pay 6 cents per $100 of evaluation, a very small amount. Probably most people don't notice it. Most people are paying somewhere in the area of $5 to $20 a year, depending on the evaluation of their home. The majority of our revenue for the operation and replacement of infrastructure at CAP is through water use.
790-2040, 790-2040. Perhaps you have a question for David Modier. He heads up the Central Arizona Project. You know, I want to go back to what you said. We came very close to having, I think you said we were within 7 feet of actually having some kind of a declaration that we, a drought declaration. Has that ever been declared in the history of the CAP project, a drought declaration?
No, a shortage, the criteria for a shortage was only in place since about 2007 when the interim guidelines were agreed to by the 7 basin states, and particularly the 3 lower basin states, about who would share in that shortage. There has never been a shortage declared, even though the Secretary of the Interior has had that ability over the years. The conditions were never there. that would have required that to happen. If you go back as short a time ago as 2008, the river was in surplus. The reservoirs were full, and people were allowed to take even more than they were allocated at that period of time. And if you look at the situation that is today and project out another 10 or 15 years, and the Bureau of Reclamation does this on a probability case on different scenarios of flows and precipitation patterns, you will see a much higher probability of surplus being declared over the next 3 to 5 years than you would shortage. The possibility of a shortage within the next 5 years is as low as about 8%.
That surprises me.
And a surplus is as high as 50 to 60% probability of surplus on the river.
And is they're basing that on the mountain snows?
They're basing that on historical patterns of snow. They're basing it on the current conditions that existed from last year and are projected in to be for this year, that combined with those and with some other measures that have been taken by the lower basin states to conserve water, to have programs that encourage the preservation of water in Lake Mead, will result in conditions that are above what they call a domestic surplus.
This might be a good time to take a break before we talk about the proposed pipeline to aid Rosemont facing some obstacles. 12:16 on the Buckmaster Show. We'll continue with our conversation with David Modier, General Manager of the Central Arizona Project, after we hear from this fine lineup of Buckmaster Show sponsors. Stay with us.
RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways and the launch of Sun Express and Sun Shuttle Transit services, with 30 projects underway, including the intersection of Alvernon and Valencia and Camino Seco to Houghton along Speedway Boulevard. Please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Ever notice how much time you spend just getting where you want to go? Travel hassles, long drives, expensive parking can all ruin your trip and create a miserable experience. Tucson International Airport has the answer. With close, easy parking, quick check-in, a short walk to your gate, and airport amenities that make traveling stress-free and enjoyable. With nonstop destinations and connections around the world, for business or for pleasure, fly TucsonAirport.com. It's the way to go.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
Want to lose weight? You're not alone. 2 out of 3 people in this country are now overweight. Using Dr. Gahn's Diet of Hope, created by renowned cardiologist Dietmar Gahn, you could lose 5 to 15% of your body weight in just 6 weeks. The program teaches proper nutrition and uses no drugs or artificial foods. Most insurance is accepted. To learn more, visit dietofhope.org or call 696-DIET.
Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero More, Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza, topped with the finest, freshest quality ingredients. Enjoy casual yet upscale dining while sampling our extensive boutique wine list. Vero Morey in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veromoreypizza.com. And now open in Oro Valley, Noble Hops, the Tucson area's first gastro pub.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is one of Southern Arizona's crown jewels. You will find that the services and amenities offered at Splendido rival those of a fine resort. But what sets Splendido apart is a continuum of healthcare that allows for a full life today. Knowing tomorrow is secure. As a true continuing care retirement community, Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoAZ.net.
It's 12:20 on the Buckmaster Show. This is the midweek edition. Wednesday, we are live here noon to 1, Monday through Friday. David Modier is with us, our newsmaker interview today. Mr. Modier is general manager of the Central Arizona Project. And David, I want to pick up on the situation with Green Valley. An 8-mile pipeline has been proposed, operated jointly by Rosemont Copper and Community Water Company of Green Valley. So Rosemont would be able to keep its pledge to replenish the aquifer from which it would pump groundwater to serve the mine it plans or it hopes to build in the Santa Rita Mountains. Where does the Central Arizona Project water come in this?
Well, I think you look back to the fact that Community Water has an allocation to Central Arizona Project water. They have a long-term agreement signed with the federal government that provides them a certain amount of allocation from the 1.6 million acre foot that CAP brings over here. So we have an obligation, a legal obligation, to deliver that water when it is requested by the subcontract holders, whether it's Community Water or Tucson Water or whoever else it may be along the canal. They are responsible for paying for the cost to build the facilities that will deliver the water to the point of it leaving the canal. Once they have built what we call the turnout or the hose connection to the canal system, then what they do with it and how they transport it for usage is no longer the responsibility of the Central Arizona Project, except there are restrictions on they cannot directly sell or transfer the CAP water. They can recharge it, and then they can sell the credits that are built up from that recharge. But that's entirely the responsibility of the end user, be it Community Water or be it Tucson Water or Oro Valley or Phoenix or whoever it may be. That control of that is very limited and spelled out in the agreement between the end user and the federal government.
The terminus of the Central Arizona Project is in Tucson, correct? So how does it work for Green Valley?
Well, the terminus of the canal system actually ends approximately parallel to Interstate 10. Then there is a pipeline that was extended by Central Arizona Project and Tucson Water to jointly build a recharge facility known as the Pima Mine Recharge Facility to the east of I-10. That pipeline was solely built to transport water over to that recharge facility and shared 50% between Tucson and Central Arizona Project. We split the cost to develop it, and we split the cost of water that is recharged in there, although there are contractual manners in which CAP can store more water if Tucson is not storing all of their water, those types of intricacies in the arrangement. There is a bit of capacity that is over and above what is used today, and that capacity could be used to supply a Community Water or a FICO.
The pecan growers.
Pecan growers down there, if they wanted to use CAP water, either to fulfill their contract needs or as a groundwater saving project in the instance of FICO.
But as far as Rosemont, you and your colleagues at the Central Arizona Project are not taking a stand one way or another.
It's none of our business. What happens in regards to economic development, if the water is used according to the regulations that have been stipulated by the Central Arizona Project and the federal government, how that water is used economically is the decision of the end user and the political entity that has control over that contracted water.
But Community Water Company of Green Valley, under the agreements that have been signed, is entitled to a portion of the Central Arizona Project
water.
Yes,
they have a firm contract, and they have been paying over the years the capital cost, the repayment portion of the annual fee for the Colorado River water. They have not been required to pay the ongoing operation and maintenance because they haven't been using it other than a small amount that has been allowed to be recharged either by CAP or Tucson Water in the Pima Mine Recharge Project.
When you were at Tucson Water, isn't it true that we were one of the largest cities in the United States that relied entirely on groundwater?
Well, I think we were one of the largest cities in the world that relied entirely on groundwater until the Central Arizona Project made its debut in the Tucson area.
And that was now the plan is to try to replenish that aquifer under the city, right?
By not pumping. Yeah, the facilities that were built out in Avra Valley in the late 1990s and early 2000s were to a sort of recharge and recover on an annual basis the amount of water that was put in from the Central Arizona Project related to City of Tucson's contract for CAP water. And the essence was that there would be the water would essentially be treated, soil aquifer treatment process is what it's technically called, and that water then recovered essentially the quality of groundwater, although certain characteristics of CAP water would always remain within that water, and that would be things like hardness. And
does desalinization, there has been the project that the Bureau of Reclamation completed a pilot project last spring over in Yuma. Does it make sense for our area, desalinization?
Well, I think that if you looked at it in terms of economic sense today, it probably does not make sense. Economic wouldn't, as accountants would say, it doesn't pencil out today. But certainly in the long term, it's an option. Because if we do encounter the continuation of weather modification patterns from whatever the cause may be, I won't get into that argument over it, but if there is a lesser flow on an average basis in the Colorado than we are experiencing today, then there certainly will be times when there will be shortage of available water out of the Colorado. How can that be supplemented? That's been one of the issues that we deal with almost on a daily basis, and part of the analysis is, can we use desalination? Either desalinating groundwater in the Yuma area, which the Yuma desalting plant was built to do, or do we desalt brackish groundwater in other areas along the canal in the state, in the Buckeye area west of Phoenix, a significant pool of brackish groundwater, or do we join with the other states and we say we really long-term need to more consistently augment the Colorado? Can we work with the country of Mexico and develop a desalination project that would supply the border communities in Mexico and Tucson and Phoenix and part of Southern California with an augmentation to the Colorado by building a larger facility in the Gulf of California?
It would cost a lot of money to upgrade that facility. It was built in the 60s in Yuma.
To upgrade the Yuma desalting plant.
Or not would, 60s, 90s.
It was
right?
built in the 90s.
I was thinking about your CAP was built in the 60s, talking about your infrastructure problems.
Yeah, no, the YDP was built in the 90s. It never went into surface until recently because we went into floods along the Colorado immediately, and there was no need to activate the plant. But the pilot run we completed this year showed that the plant does function as it was designed to do. It's a ways behind in terms of today's technology and would have to be upgraded to be economical to operate on a longer-term basis. So that is a possibility There are a lot of issues that need to be overcome in terms of what is a long-term water supply and how will that be counted against or in addition to Arizona's allocation to Colorado River. These are issues that will have to be dealt with over the ensuing years with the Department of the Interior to determine how efficient and how that plant could be used.
David Modier has been joining us on the Buckmaster Show, the general manager of the Central Arizona Project. Thank you, Mr. Modier. David, it's good to see you. Thanks for coming in studio, and we appreciate your visit.
Thank you very much, and look forward to speaking with you all again. It's nice to be back in Tucson. Always enjoyed it here.
Thanks a lot. David Modier on the Buckmaster Show. We'll be talking about nutrition, omega-3s with Jack Chalom. That's next on the Buckmaster Show after we get a news update and a quick break. Stay with us.
With SRN News, I'm Greg Clugston in Washington. The Secret Service says a suspect in a White House shooting has been arrested at a Pennsylvania hotel. Authorities this week found ammunition outside the White House exterior and say that a bullet hit an outside window of the executive mansion. Consumer prices dropped slightly last month. Meanwhile, oil prices are shooting higher today, topping $100 a barrel for the first time in several months. Lawmakers in Greece have voted in favor of the new government formed last week. The confidence vote in Parliament supports a pledge by the Prime Minister to speed up economic reforms. More tablets are hitting the market. Barnes & Noble says its new Nook tablet electronic device will begin arriving in stores today, one day ahead of schedule. Amazon.com shipped its similar Kindle Fire device on Monday. More details at srnnews.com.
Since 1959, Assistance League of Tucson has helped thousands of disadvantaged men, women, and children in the Tucson area. Donated items, thrift shop proceeds, volunteer hours, and financial gifts help support our philanthropic programs like Operation School Bell. Your generosity continues to change lives in our community. For more information on how you, too, can make a difference, visit us at assistanceleaguetucson.org. Assistance League of Tucson, volunteers working together.
There are times when you save, and there are times when you
save big.
Whoa. Take vehicle loans, for instance. Any time of the year, Pyramid Federal Credit Union can help you save with lower rates. But now, for a limited time, we're helping you
save big.
That means rates as low as 4.5% APR when you buy or refinance a vehicle loan. Plus terms up to 60 months, whether it's new or used. You won't just save. You'll
save big.
That never gets old. Stop by any Pyramid Federal Credit Union or visit us at pyramidfcu.com to learn more. That's 4.5% APR vehicle loans for a limited time. Plus, save another 0.25% with payment options.
That's huge.
Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life. Learn more at pyramidfcu.com. 4.5% APR on vehicle loans for a limited time. Restrictions may apply. Membership eligibility required. NCUA insured.
A simple solution to foot and lower back problems could be a top-quality, custom-made foot orthotic created by Bob Novak. A certified pet orthist, Bob is the best in Southern Arizona in the creation of the right foot support that your body needs and at a price you can afford. Please give Bob Novak a call, 795-2553, or visit him at Arizona Limb and Brace, Rosemont and Fifth Street. Your feet will thank you every day.
There are a million people in metropolitan Tucson, and they have a million stories to tell. That's why there is TucsonCitizen.com, the voice of Tucson. Nearly 100 citizen journalists and bloggers, including the Buckmaster Show, report the news and provide perspective, opinion, and information about everything from local politics to the Arizona Wildcats. Visit TucsonCitizen.com today to read what you can't find in traditional media or to contact us to add your voice to the voice of Tucson, TucsonCitizen.com.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is a very special place, offering a continuum of health care in a resort atmosphere. Splendido received two 2007 Best of 50 Plus Housing Awards from the National Association of Home Builders for overall best continuing care retirement community and interior design. Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoAZ.net.
.1234 on the Buckmaster Show, the Wednesday edition. Jack Chalom is known as the Nutrition Reporter. He publishes a monthly newsletter under the same name. Jack Chalom is the Buckmaster Show contributor on nutrition. Also, Jack is based here in Tucson. He's a personal nutrition coach and one of America's most trusted health writers. He's a member of the American Society for Nutrition, and he's a best-selling author. More than 20 books to his credit, including his latest, No More Fatigue. Jack, good to see you.
Always good to be on the show, Bill.
I like the headline. This is pretty new stuff. It's cutting edge about omega-3 fish oil supplements ease depression and cognitive problems. That is the lead in the Nutrition Reporter, your November edition. What's the bottom line on this?
If you're feeling depressed, the omega-3s could set you right. And some of this is based on two studies by a team of Australian researchers led by Dr. Natalie Sin. And I've gotten to know Natalie over the last few months, just corresponding by email. And in one of the studies on seniors, they gave people very high doses of fish oils, and it relieved their depression. It also improved their verbal skills and just a lot of other benefits, physical pain issues decreased. And they did another study on children who were ADHD, basically hyperactive mm-hmm. kids. And they found that they tended to be very low in the omega-3s.
And the older folks with the mild cognitive impairment, the condition that's often a prelude to Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia, apparently one of the studies, Ms. Sin's study, the first study she did, shows that there was improvement in that area.
Yeah, and this is very, very significant, because mild cognitive impairment is usually a prelude to Alzheimer's disease. And it's kind of like when people just start to get a little foggy and too forgetful and don't remember how to do the basics of life. And again, high doses of omega-3 fish oils really made a difference. Really makes you think about, you know, how much of this is related to deficiencies of these important nutrients. Dr. Sin did not study vitamin D, but that's another very important factor, especially as we head into the wintertime, even here in Tucson.
And we should clarify, when you say high levels of the omega-3s, what are we talking about?
About 1,600 milligrams of EPA and maybe 160 of DHA.
That's not out of the question. I mean, many people take about 2,000 milligrams of fish oil a day.
Yeah, it might be 3-4 capsules a day, or a big tablespoon of cod liver oil will provide about the same amount.
This is the Buckmaster Show with Jack Chalom, the Nutrition Reporter. He is our contributor on nutrition. If you have any questions about vitamins or supplements, 790-2040. And speaking of vitamins and supplements, I'm sure that all of our listeners have seen the headlines, some of the studies saying basically forget about them. Forget about the vitamins.
Well, some of these studies, you know, the two recent ones were done so poorly, they should have never been printed. And, you know, in our 24-hour news cycle, they tend to get repeated uncritically. One of the studies looked at elderly women, and they reported that women who took vitamin supplements, whole range of things from multivitamins to B vitamins, had a higher risk of death. Well, when you look at the details of the study, I mean, we're laughing here in the studio, but, you know, it was like a 1 or 2% increased risk of death, which is just meaningless from a scientific standpoint. And we really don't know much about dosages. I mean, the women were asked to remember on three different occasions what they were taking over a 20-year span.
Oh, really? 20 years?
So,
huh?
Yeah. Tell me, Bill, do you remember what supplements you were taking 20 years ago?
I basically can maybe remember what I took this morning, my supplements. We're going to go to the Buckmaster Show live line. I believe Lynn is ready now with us. Lynn, go ahead. You're with Jack Chalom.
Good morning, Jack. I'd like to ask you about two supplements. One is a brand new one I read about in Reader's Digest that's called Prevagen, that is for Alzheimer's. It's a jellyfish extract. Have you heard anything about that one?
Yes, I have. The research is very limited on this. I would probably favor the fish oils mm-hmm. and high-potency B vitamins. I think the research is much better on those.
Okay, and the other one is something called hyaluronic acid, which is from the comb of a rooster that's supposed to be good for arthritis and perhaps cataracts.
Yeah, I'm not sure it would have any benefits in cataracts in terms of osteoarthritic pain. Mm-hmm. Probably some benefits. I would probably start with something like glucosamine and chondroitin mm-hmm. and see if that helps. And
I was just curious because there was a huge ad in Arthritis Today about a one shot of hyaluronic acid stopping pain for 6 months.
Yeah, you know, when you look at the research, mm-hmm. the injections work much better than the oral supplements.
Okay.
And the difficulty may be finding a doctor who's willing
well,
to do that.
Well, evidently, there are orthopedic surgeons here in Tucson that are doing it, so I just wanted to see what you knew about it.
Thank you, Lynn, for the call. Also, next up for you, Jack, and this is along the lines of what we were talking about the supplement studies. This caller did not want to go on the air, but wants you again to comment, wanted to know how do you trust any of these supplement studies? It seems like some of them are just not very believable.
Well, you know, I just published an article in one of the medical journals really dealing with how flawed so much medical research is today. And my last line in the article is really about, does this make sense? And, you know, there's so much research showing that supplements do have health benefits. Just taking a simple multivitamin a day has tremendous health benefits. And that's what the lion's share of the research shows. You're always going to have exceptions. And you know, there's this pressure to publish, publish, publish. And I think a lot of garbage ends up in the medical journals. There's no real solid peer review process, even though the journals claim to have one. So you have to trust your instincts.
And you do a lot of vetting before you publish some of these.
I do.
Pass this information along.
I do. And I just see so much that is published uncritically. And I've been through the peer review process, and sometimes the editors just don't know what to do with a very original article.
Want a couple? Read a few of the headlines from the Nutrition Reporter. Ginger root supplements reduce markers of colon inflammation. Low levels of vitamin B12 may impair thinking in seniors. Green tea reduces children's risk of contracting the flu,
and adults as well.
Hmm. Risk of breast cancer is reduced with calcium and vitamin D. And this one's for all of us who have any stress-related issues. Who doesn't? Vitamin B complex. I've heard about this before. Apparently, there's new research showing that vitamin B vitamin supplements reduce the effects of work stress.
Yeah, and some of this research, believe it or not, goes back to the 1940s.
Wow.
And this is just a brand new study that really said, yep, all this research is right. The B vitamins are really a great anti-stress supplement.
And we didn't mention CQ10. What's this new form of CQ10?
It's called ubiquinol, and that's what you'll find at the health food stores. They're trying to distinguish it from coenzyme Q10. It's absorbed about twice as well as regular CoQ10 and just seems to amplify the benefits to the heart and to the brain.
And we should look for that then, do you think?
That's what I started taking. I was at a conference about a year ago with one of the lead researchers on ubiquinol, and he certainly convinced me.
Okay, Jack Challum, where can folks get the Nutrition Reporter?
I've got all of last year's episodes, issues. We aren't doing video quite yet, up at nutritionreporter.com, and there is subscription information up there as well.
Thanks, Jack. And your newest book, No More Fatigue, how's it doing? Pretty well?
It's doing pretty well. Thank you, Bill.
Okay. Thanks, Jack Challum.
RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways and the launch of Sun Express and Sun Shuttle Transit services, with 30 projects underway, including the intersection of Alvernon and Valencia and Camino Seco to Houghton along Speedway Boulevard. Please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
From antique to contemporary, Persia to Pakistan, Tibet to Turkey, Karimi Oriental Rugs brings the world to Tucson at the corner of East Fort Lowell and Dodge. Owner-operator Amir Karimi personally selects the world's finest exquisite hand-woven rugs. Sale, purchase, wash, repair, restore, and appraise. East Fort Lowell and Dodge for Karimi Oriental Rugs and KarimiOrientalRugs.com. Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn is still the standard bearer for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. Founded in 1930, the Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. Travel and Leisure magazine names the Arizona Inn one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. And the Arizona Inn is proud of its AAA 4-diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson, 2200 East Elm, and on the web at arizonainn.com.
With 2 out of 3 people in this country overweight, you're not alone in wanting to shed some pounds. Now you can lose 5 to 15% of your body weight in just 6 weeks using Dr. Gahn's Diet of Hope. The physician-supervised program created by renowned Tucson cardiologist Dietmar Gahn and certified nutrition counselor Elizabeth Gahn. To learn more about Dr. Gahn's Diet of Hope, call 696-DIET or log on to dietofhope.org.
Vero Amore presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh, homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero Amore. Casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Vero Amore in Tucson on North Swan at Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com. And now in Oro Valley, Noble Hops, the Tucson area's first gastro pub.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
It's 12:49 on the Buckmaster Show. The home of the Buckmaster Show is AM 1030 KVOI, the voice, Southern Arizona's most powerful news talk station. And of course, our simulcast partners in Globe and Douglas. And we pretty much have Southern Arizona covered from one end to the other. Tucson-based writer Lydia Millett has been called one of the finest writers of her generation. Her last effort was a collection of short stories titled Love in Infant Monkeys. Love that title. Earned her a Pulitzer Prize finalist nomination. Her new novel is titled Ghost Lights, published by W.W. Norton. Ghost Lights returns readers to the absorbing world of Lydia's book, How the Dead Dream, which was named the Penn USA Award for Fiction. That book came out in 2008. Lydia Millett joins us now. Lydia, good to see you.
It is such a pleasure to be here, Bill.
Lydia, tell me, did you set out to do a trilogy when you started on How the Dead Dream? And is then Ghost Lights part two of the trilogy?
That's right. Yeah, I decided I didn't want to write another long book. I wanted to write short books, but I wanted to stay in the same world for for a long time. And so that's why I decided to write sort of three books instead of one big doorstop.
Ghost Lights picks up where How the Dead Dream ends with a character named T, a precocious real estate mogul who's gone missing after the tragic death of his fiancée. T's assistant, Susan, sets off on a hunt to find the missing man, winding up in Belize. Tell us about how, first of all, for those that don't know about How the Dead Dream, how does Ghost Lights then pick up the story?
Well, actually, they're just chronologically in order. And so after T disappears in the jungle, it's actually Susan, his assistant's husband, Hal, who goes down to Belize looking for T because he hasn't been heard from and everyone's very worried. And there's been a hurricane and people are afraid that he's died. And so Hal, mostly as an excuse to get out of Los Angeles where he lives after he discovers that his wife Susan is actually having an affair, volunteers to go looking for T down in the tropics. And so this book is the story of his adventures down there.
And How the Dead Dream, how did you envision this trilogy? I mean, what were you thinking?
Well, I told each of the stories in the trilogy from a different point of view. And so the first book is about T, who's this, as you said, real estate, well, sort of mini mogul, who begins breaking into zoos after his fiance dies to be near these vanishing animals. And then this book is from the point of view of Hal, who's actually an IRS, who works for the IRS and is the father of Casey, who's this wheelchair-bound girl that T becomes very close to in the first book. So this is then quite a different point of view. And then the third book is actually told from Susan's point of view. So that's Casey's mother and Hal's wife. And she inherits this mansion full of taxidermy and goes to live there in Pasadena. And so the third book, which comes out next year, is called Magnificence, and that's told from Susan's point of view, and that ends the cycle.
Animals are often central characters in your stories. You've said that your love of animals came before your love of language. Were you raised in an environment where animals were very important?
Well, I wouldn't really say that, except that we read a lot of books about animals and we had a lot of pets. But you know, we didn't have much truck with wild animals. I grew up in a big city, we had a relatively small house and just a lot of guinea pigs and cats and.
But you love
mice.
Animals.
I do. I love animals, and I always have. I never lost the childhood love of animals that some people believe they lose as they grow older.
Share with us a passage or two from Ghost Lights.
I would be happy to. So this is a scene right after Hal believes he discovers his wife Susan being unfaithful to him, and it's about a page long. When he first met Susan, he remembered, stepping through the metal detectors and out into the parking lot, she was almost a hippie. The year was 1966. She was a teacher back then. Though she did not engage in politics much, or smoke marijuana, she had honey-colored long hair, wore all natural fabrics, and believed in free love. Shortly after they met, she announced a plan to move into an intentional community called the Eden Project, up in Mendocino. He had to work hard to dissuade her. She was young and idealistic, and more than that, she was romantically inclined, with a tableau in her mind of fresh air and fields of strawberries, a pure life, etc. He was idealistic, too, but wary of stereotype, and quite certain of what he wanted, namely, for her not to move into an intentional community with a lute player named Rom. Mm-hmm. In the end, he won her over by arguing that the intentional community was elitist. He added to this an insinuation that it was also racist.
Lydia Millett, reading from Ghost Lights, her new novel. Your book of short stories titled Love in Infant Monkeys, again, I love that title, which was a Pulitzer Prize finalist. Is your approach to planning a novel different than the short story approach, and which do you prefer?
Well, you know, I'm much more comfortable with novels, but both of them I write somewhat without calculation and without planning these days, I'm afraid. I find it's just much more of a joy to sit down and not know what I'm about to do than to plan ahead. And
so you don't outline the whole book like some writers?
I don't outline it all anymore. No.
What is your work ethic when you're working on a book?
You know, I used to have an ethic, but now all I have is desperation. Because, you know, I'm the mother of two very small children, and so whatever moment I can snatch from my daily life and to do my writing, I go ahead and take.
Why did you choose Belize? You've been there, I assume.
Yeah, so I my family went down there for Christmas the year after my father died, because we didn't want to have the same old kind of Christmas that we'd had while he was alive and have to remember him at that time. And so we went down to Belize. My daughter was just about one. And we did lots of snorkeling and took boat trips to see animals like manatees and did hikes in the jungle. And I thought it was an interesting place and sort of an exceptional place.
What writers have influenced you, Lydia?
Oh, that is always a difficult question. You know.
And what are you reading now? I mean, what do you read for fun?
Actually, I just got from the library Joan Didion's new book, which looks interesting. But I read voraciously. I read all the time and all kinds of different things. One of my favorite writers is actually this obscure Austrian named Thomas Bernhardt, who's very, very funny and writes these long run-on sentences that go for pages and pages, translated from the German, of course.
Do you know, how about any writers that would be household words for our listeners?
Well, local writers that I love include Joy Williams, who's mm-hmm. an excellent, excellent writer. Stacey Richter, mm-hmm. Who's a very good short story writer. Kate Bernheimer, who is sort of a specialist in fairy tales. All those are Tucson writers and very good ones.
What would you like the reader to take away from Ghost Lights?
Oh, I would like the reader to take away anything from Ghost Lights. I just want people to read it.
Is there a particular message that you would like folks to take away?
You know, all my books are about empathy, and so I suppose if the book is about anything, it's about empathy, about compassion and empathy.
So this book was not just released. It was released in the autumn or late summer. So the next one will be coming out?
Yeah, Magnificence, the sequel to this one, comes out next fall, same time next year from Norton.
And is it finished?
It is finished.
Okay, so you can breathe a little easier now, having.
I can breathe.
Lydia Millett has been talking about her new book, Ghost Lights. How difficult is it for a writer to make a living these days writing?
It is difficult. You know, there aren't that many writers alive in the U.S. today who actually make a living fully off writing. You just have to be flexible in the kinds of writing you're willing to do, I think, though. And finally, you can probably pull it off.
When you do a project, is it pretty much, you mentioned you have the two children to worry about, and also you have your job at the Center for Biological Diversity. How much, is it late nights or early mornings, or how much, is it whatever you can work in?
It's sort of, you know, 10 and 15 minute segments during the day because I'm too tired at night after I put the kids to bed to really write. And I can't wake up early in the morning because I just can't. I'm, you know, 42. And so, yeah, so it's just sort of in between my, my day job moments.
Any moments come to you in your dreams that you incorporate in your book?
I find that those moments, I think they're brilliant right then in the middle of the night. When
Aren't
I wake
they,
up.
Though?
But,
I love them.
But no, it turns out they're terrible. Turns out they're terrible.
Oh, really?
Invariably. It's always like, oh, yes, that was a great idea. No, it actually was not. But it felt great at the time.
Do you keep a pen and paper by your bed for ideas?
I don't.
You don't.
Precisely because they're
because
usually
they
such bad ideas. Right?
Bad ideas in the long run. Lydia, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Lydia Millett has been with us. The book is Ghost Lights, published by W.W. Norton. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show, the Wednesday edition. The Buckmaster Show brought to you in part by Flowers Rieger & Associates, certified public accountants, 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com. Have a great afternoon. We will see you tomorrow, noon to 1, here on KVOI on the Buckmaster Show.
KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. 930 KAPR Douglas. And 1240 KJAA Globe, the Voice Radio Network.